This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show.
I can't wait until American women can't get blueberries for their smoothies.
I guess I just wanted to do that because Sue's back today and Fred's back as well, and Ethan's not here, so we don't quite have the whole gang back, but it is close on a rainy Thursday where we're supposed to have baseball. But welcome to the show, everyone who's going to listen to baseball. We're going to keep you entertained here for just a little while. I told Fred that I'm hoping that the game gets delayed like maybe by 3 hours, because then we can watch it and right. Listen to it tonight. And I'm being serious about that because, you know, I am a big baseball fan, and I'm not going to act like opening day is not going on right now. Fred and I go way back with, you know, the KMOX side of the building for about 15 years. You and I were doing the opening day coverage and doing a broadcast right around now. Well, a couple hours ago, we would have wrapped up with Tom Ackerman. Tom was on the show on Monday. I do miss those days, Fred, mainly because it gave me the rest of the afternoon off after we did the broadcast, and then I'd probably go home and watch the game.
Yeah, I've got the DVR going at home, so I imagine who knows what I'm going to have when, you know, during this whole rain delay.
Well, you know what I had to do today, and I don't know, I think a lot of fans are going to have to do this. I didn't even know how to watch the game, because you might remember I had Fubo, I got rid of Fubo, so I went to the page that I guess it's FanDuel Sports Midwest has set up. And then I went to Amazon, and I just kind of searched on my Amazon page, and that's where I got. I think I got the free trial. It says free 7-day trial.
Perfect.
And then $20 a month after that. But what was confusing is that if you go online where, and there was a link that I found at the Post-Dispatch, you could pay. I wanted to pay for the whole year because you save money that way.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to give me that option when I went on Amazon, so I don't know. But I just want to be able to see the games. So we'll figure out what's going on with the delay this afternoon. We'll keep you posted on that. We're going to talk about Fred's trip, but I really wanted to do that in an entire segment. So I told Ethan yesterday, Fred, I said, look, we're going to block off the 4 o'clock hour, like 4:25 after Sue's news, because honestly, we want to hear about it. I haven't asked him one thing about it, and that's on purpose, because I want to know, but I didn't want to rush through it. So we're going to do all that. Welcome back. Here's one question. We can address a couple of things as we get started. How much sleep have you had in the last 2 days, Fred?
Not a lot.
I didn't think so.
We returned. We got in at 3 a.m.
Jeez.
Yesterday?
Yesterday,
3 a.m.
Yeah.
Because when we were talking about you on the air, I said, I haven't heard from Fred. I said, he's probably sleeping right now, because who knows when he got in. I didn't know if it was, you know, 3 a.m. or 6 a.m., but we kind of assumed that you were coming back yesterday.
If you count all the delays on different airports.
Yep, sorry about
that. If you count all the delays at the different airports,
yeah.
It took about 30 hours to make the trip.
Oh my gosh, so you had delays coming back?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Worst ones were in L.A.
So walk us through that, because this is separate from the trip. We can do this now.
Oh, okay.
It's allowed.
So I woke up in Kyoto, Japan, on Tuesday morning.
Okay.
Japan time.
Right.
Which is 14 hours
ahead of St. Louis. Yeah, so as we're wrapping up,
right.
the show on Monday, you're waking up.
And we had to drive an hour to Osaka to get on the plane to fly to Tokyo. Once in Osaka, we had like a 2-hour delay to fly to Tokyo. We take an hour flight to Tokyo. We get into Tokyo. We have a 4-hour layover before we get the 10-hour flight to L.A.
Right.
And then when you get to L.A., We had a four-hour layover.
But that was kind of built
that
in,
was
right?
Supposed to
that
be?
Wasn't, because they pulled our plane off the runway as we were getting ready to get onto it.
Oh.
They took it out of service, so we had to wait for a new plane to arrive.
Okay, so that's not...
Which was like a really old plane.
That's not a layover. That's a delay.
That's right.
Okay, wow.
So that way, we didn't leave L.A. till like 10:30 at night, L.A. time, so we didn't get home until, mid-morning.
Yeah, that's rough, especially coming home, right?
It's one thing when
you have stuff like that. We went, when I took listeners to Spain a couple years ago, you might remember my friend Rick in Las Vegas was on that trip. He's going to Greece with us in a few weeks. He had major little delays because he wasn't coming with the rest of the group from St. Louis. But again, you kind of put it behind you. You're finally there. You're on the trip. But coming back, you just want to get damn home into your own bed, right?
Yeah, 100%. We were stuck in like the most boring part of LAX airport. There was just nothing around.
Like
one restaurant. It was really ugly.
Yeah.
Boy, it's been, it's weird because, Fred, as you know, I used to go to L.A. at least four or five times a year, and it's been 5.5 years since I've been there. I remember it was November of 2019, and when I was there, and that last year that I was going to L.A., they were doing major, major renovations on the airport. So I don't know if that's been taken care of, but it was a big headache back then.
Where we were, it was only two gates in one of the terminals, and it was just awful.
Ugh.
Well, we're very curious to hear about your stay over there and what you experienced, and I'm curious about the cultural differences and stuff like that. So we're going to have that conversation a little bit later this afternoon after Sue's news. Speaking of Sue, she was out this week as well. Hope you had a good... You were just kind of taking care of some business at home, right?
Yeah, which of course never happens. And instead, I ended up doing something else, but that's how it is.
It is how it is.
And what are you gonna do?
No, I know. I've done that too. You take off. I gotta get this stuff
man,
done.
I'm
right?
gonna really get down and get these basements cleaned out.
Nothing.
But I got a lot of errands done and stuff like that, and took a detour. But that's it. But I have a gift for all of us.
Oh,
yes.
Good.
That
really?
Will come up later.
Are you gonna do this at the fish fry? Are you gonna do it today?
No, I have to do it today. Everything I wore at the fish fry on Friday smelled like fish, and I thought, I'm presenting this today.
You know what's funny about that? So I got you were not here, so I have to share the story about that. So we're at Assumption last week, Fred. It was a really good one. They're all good, but there
really
were a lot of people. We had a good crowd for the round table, and it was exceptional. By the way, we're at Queen of All Saints. We're staying in South County tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, right?
Yeah.
I have to think about this. So I brought fish home on Friday night, and I can't remember... Oh, yeah. Okay, we had the Kilmeade thing. Uh-huh. So I got to go out to the breakfast with Kilmeade Saturday morning. We go out in St. Charles County. And I get in my car, and then I thought it was me. I'm like, man, I smell like the fish fry. But it was my car because the fish was in the car, right?
Oh.
So I walk into the breakfast, and I said something. At one point, Brad was around. I can't remember if he was at the breakfast, but I was kind of talking about the fact that I said, excuse me if I smell like fish, because I noticed that my car smelled like the fish fry. So we set up the thing at Kilmeade later in the afternoon for the VIP reception, and Trisha did a great job of getting our signage out there. It was on national television because they streamed it.
Oh, that's cool.
And Brad admitted, he goes, there was at one point where I thought, because I heard you say you smelled like fish, I swear to God, I thought I smelled you. And he goes, but it was just like the sign that came out of the package that was also there next to us when we were doing the broadcast. Thing was permeated by the fish fry smell.
I had to clean this purse. It went into the leather. Here's the thing,
Fred.
We were down
more
the
than
draft.
Other fish fries?
Yeah,
yes,
we were
I think so. There's a reason.
From the cooking, and they had a big fan going because, you don't want the, it's too hot. And it was blowing directly at us, which smelled good at the time, but it is in every fiber you've ever had.
It was worse, Fred, because as you go down the hallway, that's where the restrooms were. And the first time I kind of took a trip down there, I thought, the breeze is just kind of coming through from the backside of the church, which in fact it was, but they had the windows open because the fryers were right there. So everything from the fryers was coming right at us.
My shoes, my tennis shoes, are still slightly squishy because I washed them.
Sue, I totally can relate because of what happened on Saturday. So let me do a couple things here just while we got everyone's attention and baseball hasn't started, just to talk about the Cardinals. Fred and I have our Cardinals gear. Sue does too. Do you have your Cardinals gear on today?
Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
Come on.
Look at us as homers here and, cheering for the hometown team. By the way, have you heard KMOX is on FM now, Fred? I don't know if you heard about that. It's been really quiet. It's been a secret, even on our station. No one's talked about it yet. So I like one of the few things I still like about the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is Derek Gould. I like him personally. I always have. I consider him a friend. I'm sure he hates my politics, but we never have an issue with that. And I just think he's a really, really good writer. I like Katie Wu, who covers the Cardinals as well. I don't know Katie. But Derek, I don't like some of the other guys. I won't mention their names, like Hockman. I'm sorry, did I mention that name? The Cardinals, this is what he wrote today, and I thought this was interesting. Fred, I think you'd be able to appreciate this, and maybe you read it earlier. The Cardinals begin their 134th season in the National League in their 20th year at Busch 3, which is kind of interesting that this is year 20 already for the quote, new stadium. So they've never had a chance this soon to introduce themselves to a faithful. This is, and by the way, oh man, I almost screwed up here today. Happy birthday, Judy Reardon.
Oh,
it is
happy
my
birthday,
mom's birthday
Judy.
Today. So March 27th, my
that's
mom's
great.
Birthday, that's today. That's the earliest regular season game in club history. They've also never had a month, obviously, that could be as defining. One of the things, Fred, and I know that you've heard me talking about this, is I looked at the schedule for the first month, and it's not good. It's not easy. I mean, there's a lot of really good competitive teams. I think we play the Phillies and the Mets, and of course the Brewers are on the list. So the Twins are good. They may win that division. They face the Cardinals today. But when Derek kind of ran this down, he did a little history here. Look to recent springs for examples as to how the Cardinals didn't shake the winter chills. And if you haven't paid attention, they've not been very good in spring training, right? From 2000 to 22. And he took out 2020 because of no April games. That was the pandemic year. The Cardinals had winning records on May 1st in every year. Fred, you want to take a guess? Every year they had a winning record on May 1st, except 2007. That was the one losing season in that span. The past two seasons, the Cardinals have had losing opening months, going a combined 24 and 36, or a 64-win pace. They have not had three losing Aprils since 1984. 85
wow.
and 86. And 85 is definitely an interesting year. And Ricky Horton talked about 85, and the expectations of the team were very low. And he was offering us some hope yesterday because, you know, you have certainly examples of young, underestimated players on a team that exceeded and actually went to a World Series. For the first time since 2007, I found this interesting, Fred. I didn't know this because we have young players. The Cardinals opened the year without a single player on the active roster who is eligible for Rookie of the Year. So I guess anyone that has, you know, like Victor Scott or anybody like that can't be Rookie of the Year, because maybe they can be, but if they're not on the opening, he's just saying nobody on the opening day roster.
That's so fair enough.
That could change. For the first time in at least three decades, the Cardinals have 24 or more players returning from the previous year. And Derek kind of posed this as a reset, question mark. Is it a reset, really? Because we got all these players that
reset
were here.
Reset or a replay.
Well, right, exactly. So there just a couple of things that I thought were interesting as we get the season started. And we're going to hope that things are better, because it provides Fred and I, and Sue, I'm sure you too, but I don't know that you're into it as much as we are. It's entertainment. It really is. And we talk about baseball all the time, and we exchange messages. I was with, I was texting Jennings and Joe Arnold today because, you know, Joe's made a prediction, Fred, our friend in Louisville, he says a winning season. He's calling it by like five games over 500, we'll have a winning season. I said five games under 500 is more my scenario.
You really need to get off to a good start to keep the fans interested and coming.
Yeah. And, you know, that was part of Derek's column as well. They have a recognition, and I think the Cardinals have a recognition, that this is something where if you get too far behind the eight ball, especially because, look, you know, you mentioned Joe and Jennings are down in Louisville. They love the Cardinals. They love to, Joe grew up here, you know, in Belleville. But people love to come to St. Louis for weekend trips. You start to map out these trips right around this time. If you're saying, hey, let's go see the Cardinals, we're pumped, let's go in July. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not. Maybe the Cardinals aren't going to have much going for them. So it is important. And, you know, I think that the tourism folks here in St. Louis are going to keep a close eye on that for sure. All right, well, we have a pretty full show today, and I do want to talk a little bit more about tomorrow, because we'll have the Live Reardon Roundtable. We'll be out there in Oakville off of Christopher Drive at Queen of All Saints. It's a great location, easy to get to. We'll have a special guest in the 5 o'clock hour tomorrow, George Gray, who is the voice on The Price is Right. We'll do a live Price is Wrong. And that's pretty special because we haven't had one of those in a couple of years. On the roundtable tomorrow will be Jane. She was off last week, Fred. She had to travel.
Yeah.
Jeff Rainford will be here. State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman. Something about Mary Elizabeth, Fred. I don't know. I've got to catch you up on some things. The news out yesterday is that she will not seek re-election in her Senate seat.
Huh.
That caught me off guard because she, of course, wasn't too long ago. She was going to be the next congresswoman from the third district.
Yeah.
She pulled out of that, ran for Secretary of State. That didn't work out. And, you know, this is her first term in the Senate, so we'll find out about that with Mary Elizabeth. We'll talk to her tomorrow. Of course, in the 4 o'clock hour, Paul Hall, Cusimano, and then George live. Come see us because it's fun.
Yes.
Not only is it fun to see the show, but to see George do The Price is Wrong, the whole team will be out there. That's really fun.
You know,
if you're going to mark a time, I'd say 5:07. Come on out.
And while you're saying that, I got a text from George saying, hey, great, I'm all set for tomorrow. Just let me know where and give me enough time to drive there,
right,
and I'll see you there.
Yeah, he just swung Love into it. Town this week, and I think he's trying to get to the baseball game today. So you know what's going to happen. It'll be a rain out, and then he can't do it. He's going to go tomorrow. You know that's going to happen, Fred. It's our luck,
yeah,
the way that you know things have been going. All right. We'll have a lot of people have asked me a little bit about Proposition B. There was an editorial in the Post-Dispatch this morning against Proposition B. Dennis Hancock, who is my councilman member on the St. Louis County Council, is going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour. I'll be honest with you. This is one that I'm not totally supportive of necessarily. I want to hear a little bit more about it, and Dennis will do that. I've had some, you know, listeners that have reached out encouraging us to talk about that issue, and we're going to certainly do that. We have Eric Schmidt. Senator Schmidt just played a huge role in bringing the new generation of fighter jets, the F-47, which is going to be built by Boeing here in St. Louis. Of course, the Signal story is still hot. NPR defunding. Man, was that fun yesterday. I have more audio that, you know, kind of emerged from that hearing. Mike Gonzalez gave us kind of a tip on Tuesday because he was part of that hearing. And then we'll get into a little bit more of state control and the police commission because it was Governor Carnahan. What the hell did I just say?
Well, you had a time.
Here's why.
Decades,
here's
yes.
why. It was a K. It was, even though Carnahan was a C, it was a K. That's my excuse.
Okay.
It was a K name. It's the only thing I could say. How would I go back 3 decades here?
No one knows.
Governor Kehoe signed that bill today, so now it's official. The mayor will be, whoever the next mayor will be, God, I hope it's not Tish Kara, will be on that commission, and then 5 other members appointed by the governor. So that was a big deal. And then there's some interesting news revolving around the comptroller's office today. Donna Behringer, who is running for that position against Darlene Green, is trying to draw attention to that because there's some funny business going on in that office, and I guess we always thought that there would be, right? Yeah. We'll get into that a little bit later as well. We're off and running. Emily Jashinsky from The Federalist will kick things off coming up next. We got Fred back, Sue back. Ethan will be back tomorrow. So you've been gone all week. As a reminder, this is the week that my wife and daughter are in the Caribbean on their cruise.
That's right.
I generously booked for them, but of course I booked it on the wrong week. Spring break in Rockwood was last week, so my daughter not only gets an extra spring break week, but she probably gets to repeat 4th grade, so she's got that going for her.
Oh my God.
I made it a goal at the house to only eat what I have in the freezer in the fridge, and guess what? Major success with that.
That's great.
Major success. But last night, I tried to make some cookies because I want to bring some cookies again to the fish fry.
Yeah.
And the ones that seem to be the favorite right now are the chocolate with the chocolate chips, like
yes.
the double chocolate.
Yes.
I don't know what I did last night because the one recipe I had a double recipe, and I'm not good at math. So I doubled the recipe. I put it all together. I'm doing it last night. I put the first cookies in the oven. They come out super flat. So I think I know what I did.
What?
Well, I think it wasn't enough flour. And there's a reason for that, but then it just embarrasses me if I explain it to you.
That's fair.
It was a math error, Sue.
Okay.
I'll just say that. But you know what? My dough is chilling right now, and I'll bring those cookies. If you're coming to the fish fry tomorrow, we'd love to see you. Emily Jashinsky is with us at the Federalist. Emily, if you were here, I would offer you cookies. I just want you to know that.
Never turn down cookies. That's my rule.
Hey, as a reminder, refresh my memory. I think it was you. Was it you that I pressed like on about the new song from Haim a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, it probably was. I'm a huge, huge Haim fan.
I love those girls so much. You know, when their first album came out, I like to stay on top of, you know, new music. And they played here at a little club called The Pageant. And, I think I was like one of only 5 men in the entire audience, and I was certainly the oldest, but they're really talented. For people who don't know, 3 sisters from L.A., they've kind of gotten into some acting as well, and we've been waiting for some new music, and they just put a song out. Well, let's talk. What do you want to start with, NPR or Signal? I'll let it be dealer's choice.
Well, we can go ahead and start with NPR, but there is an interesting connection between the two stories in that the NPR CEO and president is actually also the president of the Signal Board, which is a crazy coincidence.
Isn't that weird? Let's repeat that for people that might not know it. I was going to bring it up. You beat me to it. Yes, Catherine Marr, who was just filleted yesterday by members of Congress, is also on the board. You're saying she's even the CEO of the board of Signal?
She's the chairman of the board of Signal. It's called like the Signal Media Foundation. It's a nonprofit. Yeah, she's the chair of the board.
Oh, my. Well, here she was yesterday.
Why did you call President Trump a fascist and a deranged racist sociopath in 2020?
Congressman, I appreciate the opportunity to address this. I regret those tweets. I would not tweet them again today.
Yeah, she kept saying she had an evolution on her thoughts. The evolution is she's about to have millions of dollars pulled from her funding.
First of all, I do want to say that NPR acknowledges that we were mistaken in failing to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story more aggressively and
really?
Sooner.
It's unfortunate that NPR ignored the Hunter Biden laptop story, but y'all did talk quite a bit about the debunked Russia collusion. Do you know how many times NPR interviewed Adam Schiff about
Congressman, I would love to say that we actually believe we made a mistake on the Hunter Biden laptop.
Okay, all of a sudden there's a mistake. And then she brings people together, though.
PBS programming and the services that local stations provide bring Americans together. It is valued, needed, and trusted by the American people.
That was not Catherine Marr. That was the other person from PBS. But they get up there. I don't think you, in any way, shape, or form, Emily, made any case for continued funding. Now, pulling it might be a little challenging because of the numbers. You're going to need some Democrat support. But that did not go well for Catherine Marr and that team yesterday, did it?
It didn't, and I think also partially because of the clips you just played, she wanted to be conciliatory, and there's just no way for her to truly be conciliatory. She can say after the fact that NPR aired, but she was also forced to admit they don't have any conservatives on their editorial board. They have really a continued left-leaning slant. It's not as though she was able to roll out some dramatic change, especially given her own history. She definitely oversaw a push left when she was at the top of Wikipedia and Wikimedia. So she has a very hard time defending what they've done at NPR in the context of also needing Republicans and Doge to leave NPR's funding untouched. They get about $11 million. It may even be higher than that from the federal government annually. But it's, you know, they would be able to survive without the federal government, but it would be a dramatic restructuring. They would have to find out all these different funding streams. So it's a big deal. And she can't quite walk that line because she doesn't have the record to back it up.
Mike Gonzalez was on my show earlier this week. He's with Heritage. He was one of the folks who testified yesterday.
As I said in my testimony, it goes back to the basic unfairness that conservatives for 50 years have been saying, but you're completely biased. And they have the audacity to say, oh, no, we're not. And you have to just pay us. And it's just the basic.
The gentleman's time has expired.
Yeah, he ran out there. Marjorie Taylor Greene had to clip Mike Gonzalez. But look, she made, you know, they were making the point to Catherine Marr yesterday about how many people were, and you referenced this, Emily, how many people who are on, you know, the staff would consider themselves conservatives versus liberals. I mean, there's nobody. They don't even have like a token. And Yuri Berliner, this is what I've told people, including the dean of the University of Missouri Journalism School. I said, don't take my word for the fact that there's bias in the media or bias at NPR. Look at Yuri Berliner and what he wrote a year ago.
Yeah, Yuri Berliner a year ago blew the whistle on NPR, and somebody who had worked there as an editor for years and years and years wrote an essay in the Free Press describing how bad it had gotten and saying he was a big believer in NPR and in public radio, but it wasn't tenable for him anymore. And you know, he ended up getting let go, which I guess is sort of understandable if you're blowing the whistle publicly in the media, but you'd think actually what they would have wanted to do would be, you know, consulting him and saying, I'm so sorry that you feel this way. Explain to us what the problems are. How can we get better? But, you know, that's not the way that you would expect a lifetime left-wing NGO type person like Catherine Marr to approach the problem. And he left, and he's a contributing editor at the Free Press now. So it's a loss for NPR, but if their mission isn't actually to serve the public as a neutral journalistic institution, then they're actually doing really well at that. They claim that's not their mission, of course.
Yuri wrote again, you know, on the Free Press this week, and I think he had a great suggestion that they clearly aren't going to take. You know, his point was that the broadcaster, this was in the headline from the Free Press, NPR should refuse to take federal funds. They need to stop pretending it's a network for all of America and become the progressive institution it truly wants to be. Why wouldn't you do that? They're not going to change their tone. They're not going to cover news more fairly, and their audience doesn't want that, so they'll lose their audience. So why not cut ties, do it on your own, raise all the money you want, because they're already fundraising off of this, and just be done with it, because the rest of us have to do that, right? I don't think the Federalist is getting federal money right now. I know Odyssey's not getting federal money. We just went through bankruptcy. So how about level the playing field and do what you want to do, cater to the lefties? We're fine with that then.
You know, it's interesting because they seem to still want it both ways. And his suggestion is clearly the right one. But if ever there were a time for Republicans who've been wanting to do this for years, as Mike mentioned in the clip you played, this is the time. You have all of the momentum of DOGE. You have the will of the public to, like, cut government waste. And NPR knows that. I think it's what, you know, scares them most, which means Republicans have a lot of leverage if they want to actually say we should have a quote-unquote public radio station, if there's a project we can do together as the American people and, you know, actually have a public neutral radio station that serves all Americans because everyone has it on their radio. You could still maybe come up with a way to do that, but it seems highly unlikely because it seems like the entire staff of NPR sees what they're doing as already. They already see it as being in the public interest. They don't see it as being grossly biased or anti-conservative or anti-Christian. They believe that they're already doing the right work, and you can't correct that bias because it's a total worldview.
You know what would be awesome to see today? If there was some sort of leak of the text messages and the emails going back and forth from NPR employees after that testimony yesterday, because I bet that's pretty revealing and interesting. I mean, obviously that will never become public, but I just think from the standpoint of being very interested in what they would say in the aftermath of that, because I'm guessing a lot of them would not be very complimentary of Catherine Marr because she wasn't putting up the resistance, right? You got to do the resistance. And by the way, there's a lot of good satire out there about NPR. Here's one.
Good morning and welcome to NPR. A quick trigger warning. If you're a human with emotions, you may want to avoid this program. Today on the show, we talk about racism again. We interview Robin DiAngelo, a white woman who makes $50,000 a pop telling massive corporations over Zoom that their white employees are the devil. We then ask you, the listener, are you racist? If you say yes, you obviously are. If you say no, you're in denial, which means you obviously are.
That's not too far from the truth, is it? I mean, if you listen to NPR, I think you'd get a lot of that. All right, Emily, let's go into Signal and this controversy. Obviously, it's been a big deal. I don't deny that it's a significant story. I don't quite understand the calls for Pete Hegseth to resign. And I guess maybe the point that I really don't understand is how Jeffrey Goldberg's name got linked into this whole thing on the Signal chat. That is still a bit of a mystery, and I think we need to find out what the hell happened there. But your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that is the lingering question, actually, for because in no small part, that's what Mike Waltz's own colleagues are wondering, to the extent that his credibility is damaged internally among his coworkers in the Trump administration. It's because those questions among Republicans in D.C. about why he had Jeffrey Goldberg in his contacts are the ones that make people suspicious of him. And if you're suspicious of the National Security Advisor, it becomes very difficult for the National Security Advisor to stay in that role. That said, though, people in Trump world are really circling the wagons around him since Goldberg released the text messages, showing that obviously the information wasn't quite as sensitive as he framed it the day before when he said he couldn't release those text messages because they were too sensitive. So they found the Trump administration really believes they had a weapon in Goldberg releasing those text messages. They feel like they are now climbing out of this hole just as an administration and Mike Waltz individually. So that was, they saw that as pretty good news, as a pretty big boost. And, you know, to their credit, Goldberg looks really, really foolish, even if there are still, you know, serious questions. You know, Mike Waltz could have a good reason for JG, Jeffrey Goldberg, being in his Signal contact. Maybe he called him once to push back on a story, maybe to tell him that some left-wing story was wrong. These are charitable explanations. Maybe he was added to a group with Jeffrey Goldberg by someone else, and it just automatically ended up in his contacts. I use Signal a lot personally and professionally, so those are all explanations that could be plausible. But Mike Waltz isn't offering any of those explanations at
so
all.
So why do you, just out of curiosity, because you know my producer Fred just got back from Japan, and we were talking about WhatsApp, and when I've been in Europe, we've used that a lot. But why do you use Signal? I've never used it before. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, so one thing in like D.C. journalism is sources. People who work at the White House or who work at the cabinet agencies tend to like using Signal, which is one of the things that's come out since the scandal. You know, you saw Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratcliffe talking about why it's actually a preferred method of communication for the government because it's end-to-end encrypted, like iMessage, but even Signal's own people can't get into it. It's encrypted from Signal. So it tends to be a favorite of people who work in government positions because, yeah, of the end-to-end encryption. It does create some ethical problems with that, though, with record keeping. So Mike Waltz set those messages to delete after a week. It's another reason people really like Signal. And that is a problem for government employees using the platform.
Well, one thing we could probably both agree on is, don't you love the intensity of the aggressive reporting here and the coverage of this? Because the White House press corps has been doing this for the last 4 years. When Biden was in there, Emily, they were so aggressive asking those questions about why the guy in the White House wasn't even awake. So it's good to see the White House press corps consistently doing their job the same way they did in the previous administration, isn't it?
Yeah, finally, they're really interested in holding power to account. I mean, it's so beautiful that Joe Biden could practically fall asleep and it would be called a deep fake by the media. But now, of course, they're all over this story. That is definitely true. And it's one of the reasons, actually, that when the media looks around with frustration and says, why aren't Republicans going after Mike Waltz? Why aren't they demanding his resignation? It's like, well, because nobody knows if they should trust anything you put out anymore.
But, you know,
they've tuned it all out.
Going further than that, here's what I said. I had Brian Kilmeade on yesterday, and, you know, a lot of people, I'm speaking to the choir here in this audience, but for folks who don't watch Fox, I will tell you that the Fox folks have been pretty aggressive. Realistically, they have been. They've been at Laura had Mike Waltz on a couple of nights ago. She asked tough questions. There were not softballs. I've heard Peter Ducey and others ask tough questions on this very topic. So they're consistent. They really are. I bet they would not get the credit from the CNNs and, you know, the rest of the legacy media. But I've paid attention to the coverage and they're asking the right questions.
Yeah, Ingram's interview is really what helped us see that Waltz didn't have a very good excuse. Because, again, there could be plausible explanations for this that are totally innocent, but she grilled him. She didn't let him off the hook by just saying, oh, well, you know, we're trying to get to the bottom of it. She was like, no, why would it show up in your Signal contacts? So, no, I think that's true. And I think it reflects just sort of the logical problems with this scandal that people look around and say, well, we were told the Hillary Clinton stuff was a big deal. And, you know, of course, I think it was. I'm sure you do as well. But, you know, if classified information is so sensitive, then, you know, maybe we shouldn't be letting journalists accidentally into our chats.
It is. I really hope we find out exactly what happened there, because it is mysterious. I think we all understand how you can accidentally type the wrong contact. You know, we do it on text messages all the time. But if you don't have someone's contact in theory, and that's what it sounded like from Mike Waltz, especially the other night, then how does it get included? Right.
Right. Yeah. That's fundamentally the big question.
All right, Emily, great to have you on. I really, really appreciate it. You have a great week, a great weekend, and hopefully that new Haim record will be out in full very, very soon. We can both enjoy that.
That's right. Fingers crossed.
All right. Take care. We'll see you soon. I think we are hearing that the first pitch for the Cardinals is going to be around 4:45. If you're with us this afternoon because the game is delayed, welcome to the show. But yeah, they're going to get things started and the ceremony is going to start soon, I think, as well. So that's good news because I'd like to see some of the game. I'd like to listen to it on my way home. I'll be able to do that and watch it tonight. You know, we got a bunch of basketball as well, Sue, with the NCAA tournament kicking in. Absolutely. I've been watching some different shows that we've been raving about earlier this week. We'll do that with Paul Hall tomorrow as Jane will be here. I know Jane's seen a couple of these things that
I recommended.
You know, when we left on Friday, and you and I haven't talked about this yet, on Friday night, Becky and I watched that Joplin Tornado doc. Holy moly.
That's it. I told somebody about that.
Must see TV. Okay. You're going to be blown away.
Was it Netflix?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's what I told this person.
It's on Netflix, and I've yet to meet anyone who hasn't been like, oh my gosh, wow, right?
Okay.
George Rosenthal from Thrawnlet, he was there on Friday. I talked to him a couple of days ago, and he watched it right away. And
you're getting, as much as you,
especially for those of us around here, we're a little bit more informed about that tornado because we covered it. We helped with some of the relief efforts. We sent, you know, trucks full of supplies and things like that. But you're still going to be really, really shocked by what you hear and see. And the reason is because there's this one girl, and she's essentially, I'd say, there's three or four people that are the stars of this documentary, but this one girl in particular who, with her friends, was out there. They were kind of tracking the storm. They kind of fancied themselves as, you know, minor league storm chasers. Well, she had her phone on almost the whole time. So it's not necessarily great video because they're fumbling with the phone. At one point, it's on the dash of the car, but you hear the audio.
Whoa.
And remember last week I mentioned that audio that I thought was from like a convenience store. It was from a liquor store. And I remember playing that audio. And when you see that kind of portrayed in the movie, and here's the other thing, Sue, I've told people this too. You're never going to, after watching this movie and you hear tornado sirens, you're always going to have an instinct to protect yourself after you see this movie.
You know what? I need to watch
yeah.
it then.
I'm not going to show it to my little one, though.
No, not yet.
No. She's already got too many issues. And what we were, that was just 2 weeks ago when we had all those storms moving in. All right, we're going to take a break here at the top of the hour. And Fred is back from Japan. And I didn't want to rush through any of the details. Sue and I, and hopefully the audience, are very curious about some of the cultural differences, some of the things that he's seen over there, and just the trip overall. I'm curious about how Fred handled the food.
Yes.
So we're going to do that after Sue's news. We'll have Sue's news. We'll start the next hour. Fred will fill us in. We have Dennis Hancock, who's a member of the St. Louis County Council, who will talk about Proposition B. If you're in St. Louis County, you can vote on that. Perhaps you already have advanced voting, but Election Day is next week. Senator Schmidt is with us this afternoon. We're going to talk about the big news on the F-47, which is going to be built by Boeing. He played a very, very key role in securing that deal. He's got some thoughts. When I was leaving the show last night, he was on Laura's show. He's pretty much on Laura's show every other night, I think, when I tend to pay attention. But he's got some thoughts on the signal story, on some of the stuff going on with the courts out there. And then one of the breaking news stories today was Elise Stefanik is out as U.N. ambassador. President Trump has asked her to stay in Congress because of the numbers and her leadership.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's more to that story or not, but we will find out. And then Jane's on the roundtable tomorrow, Sue, with State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman and Jeff Rainford, who, of course, used to be Mayor Slay's chief of staff. But we're going to have her on at 5:30 because this was the day that the governor signed the bill to have a state police commission. So things are going to change here between now and August. They have to have this thing, according to the law, set in place with the commission members. Five members chosen by the governor. The sixth member is the mayor of St. Louis, whoever that might be. And, of course, that's a election that's also going to take place next week. But we're going to talk about that and also some of the other things related to, the police department and crime in St. Louis. So she'll join us right before audio cut of the day. It's all coming up here this afternoon. We got Sue's news. This is weird. With Sue actually coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.